Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea. I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare, technology, and healthcare delivery. My guest today is Cliff Porter. Cliff is the Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the American Healthcare Association and the National Center for Assisted Living. Cliff, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Tate Chronicles.
Thank you for having me.
Just some general questions first, Cliff. What is the American Healthcare Association? What is the National Center for Assisted Living? What are these associations?
Sure. The American Healthcare Association and the National Center for Assisted Living is an organization that represents long-term care providers, and that would include, again, assisted living patients in nursing homes around the country. And our goal is to focus on policy that impacts the patients that we serve, to advocate on their behalf, and most importantly, provide the resources that they need to not only provide quality care, but to improve the care that they receive.
Who are your members of the associations?
So our members include, again, skilled nursing facilities. That is, some people will call it a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little more complex than what it used to be. But they're also inclusive of what we call post-acute care providers that provide short-term rehab and other interventional services. And then we've got assisted living communities and kind of other long-term care providers. We represent some veterans homes. Nonprofit homes. We represent some government-owned homes as well. And these providers are committed to delivering the essential care and services our elders and folks with disabilities need in their local communities.
Cliff, this is something we hear more and more about. And actually, I've got a family member who's needs assisted living, and we're kind of working on that process. So it's hard to find anyone who hasn't been touched, or their family hasn't been touched with this need, and certainly it's a growing need with the aging population, no doubt about that. But specifically for your organizations, what type of services are you providing to the organizations themselves? Is it education? Is it lobbying in D.C.? What do you do for these folks?
Yeah, great question. It's all of the above. So our focus is to provide education services, and that's a broad array of education services from, understanding infection control policies and facilities to, understanding essentially how to have an effective national skilled nursing care. We have a whole packet that we send out to our members to help them pull off a fantastic event. So that's just some examples, and I'm oversimplifying it, but we also provide a significant amount of advocacy services, lobbying services in Washington, D.C., and help, our members, kind of understand and more importantly, hopefully influence policy in a way that's going to make sure that we're able to deliver on our mission, which is to take the best care of the folks we serve.
Well, and so are you also providing these organizations with guidance on such things as the HIPAA requirements, things like that?
Absolutely. Any complex policy issue, it's our job to more or less analyze that and make sure that our members are prepared to comply.
One thing I mentioned a few minutes ago, kind of on a personal note, I was doing some work at a long-term care facility for somebody in my family. And I had a notarized power of attorney that I thought met all the requirements. But as I found out pretty quickly, just because you download a template off the internet and have it notarized doesn't mean it really gives you full power of attorney over such things as banking or really any number of things. So I'm sure the folks that you serve need a lot of clarification and guidance not only on HIPAA requirements, but things around power of attorney and who they are authorized to give information to.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, policies, as you well know, here in Washington, D.C. in particular, is changing by the minute. And there are a lot of ideas that people come up with, some of which are good, some of which don't make a lot of sense in the real world. So our job is really to decipher all that. And if it's something that is not implementable, we get on that, try to change it. And then obviously, if it's something that is positive and a great idea, we do everything we can to support it.
And Cliff, the whole concept of if we're lucky enough to live long enough, we're all going to need care. And traditionally, I guess for thousands of years, the family provided the care. And I don't know if it's in the last 35 or 100 years, but that care model has shifted to institutions or organizations or healthcare entities that provide that care. And so I imagine that one of the things that your members have to deal with is just reimbursement, which seems so complex because there are VA facilities, there are Medicaid facilities, there are private facilities. You know, just the reimbursement and level of care seems really complex to me. Is it that complex?
Oh, yeah. No, you're hitting the nail on the head. It's a very complex system that we have. And your point about ensuring that we've got the right reimbursements and the things that we need to deliver on a mission is really important. You made a really good point at the very beginning of your statement, and that's how society has changed. Mm. Society has changed dramatically. You know, I think about my own dad, who's now in his 80s, but he grew up in a house in Washington, D.C. with his parents, his grandparents, and his great-grandparents. And they all lived together and took care of each other. The younger took care of the older.
Yeah.
It's sort of how they shared the asset, willed the house to the next generation. So somebody always had a roof over their heads.
Mm.
And that was the way folks lived. But obviously, the economy's changed. We've got a very different economy than we did when my dad was a baby. And we've got a situation now where, you know, you have to have two incomes to make anything work these days in most cases. And on top of that, you've got a lot more professional opportunities for women that didn't exist during that time. So the absence, you essentially have an absence of caregivers that can deliver care at home, and they rely on places like our members have in their communities to help solve some of those problems. But as you mentioned, unfortunately, it's a very, very complex system. And part of our role at American Healthcare Association, National Center of Assisted Living, is to try to help folks navigate that morass of complexity.
Just the demographics, I guess it's often called the aging of America, that baby boomer group that was born after World War II, they're entering an area where they need assisted care or independent living facilities, excuse me, or something like that. Is that need? I mean, where are we in that demographic plateau? Have we plateaued, or is that need growing based on? Are we in that, Cliff?
Well, we're approaching a liftoff. We're at a T minus one. It's a rocket ship, Jim. This is not a gradual growth and curve any longer. And in the skilled nursing space in particular, the key age cohort is about 85. That's essentially the time when things just don't work anymore at home. You know,
yes,
to an age and stage where you know, you could provide support, check on mama or daddy, you know, at dinner time, and make sure their stuff's handled, the bills are taken care of, and they can manage on their own still with a little help. But once you hit about 85, you start consuming the majority of the healthcare spend you're going to have in your lifetime. And that population or that cohort, that demographic you just described, is one of the fastest growing demographics that we have. There's 10,000 people turning 65 every day right now.
Whoa.
It's a rocket ship. Now, again, I always say, Jim, you know, I'm 57. My 57 doesn't look like my granddad's 57 did, that's for sure. But because we're healthier, you know, we obviously have more medications and different kinds of technology to help us live longer and live healthier. But once you get to that 85 clip, there's really no escaping. I always say no escaping gravity. Gravity just kind of takes us down. And that's when folks need the services the most.
You know, one thing that I'm aware of, Cliff, is that, people who are at a certain age now, let's say 70, are theoretically in better shape than 80 years ago, a 70-year-old.
Absolutely.
And living longer and living healthier, but that also may mean that with good health care, that period of time when assisted living and care could be much longer now than it was 100 years ago.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, I've been working in this field now for 35 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And even, you know, the first day that I walked into a facility was actually during National Skilled Nursing Care Week. And the patients that we took care of were just very, very different. And the main reason was because there just weren't a lot of options. You just essentially had, you know, home and a nursing home. And since then, we've had a variety of differing services develop that essentially provide care prior to getting to an institution. And as a result of that, we've got a lot more options available for people. But the reality is, to your point, the patient that I took care of in 1989 when I first started is very, very different than the one that we take care of today. Again, today it's a very, very sick, complex 87-year-old patient who's back and forth to the hospital, coming to us for services and ultimately get rehab and hopefully get back home. And it's sort of in this circle over and over and back and forth. So it's a real challenge. But I think, again, our sector provides a very, very important service at a time when America needs us most.
Well, and it's going to be an increasing need, Cliff. So I think in 1965, the Medicare Act was passed. And then we have the Affordable Care Act for folks under 65. Is there any chance on a federal level there's ever going to be reimbursement for long-term care? I'm not talking about rehab after surgery. I'm talking about assisted living.
Yeah, no, basically what you're saying is, you know, kind of custodial long-term care insurance.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, I was talking with some folks about this recently, so it's great you bring it up. You know, there's a myth in America. One of the myths that we have in America is that Medicaid is essentially, you know, just for the abject poor. And that's what Medicaid should be directed towards. We should take care of the abject poor. In the nursing home space, you know, Medicaid actually does take care of most people because you have to spend down your resources to get access to Medicaid. And most of us, if you're a policeman like my father was when he retired, I mean, he's not a wealthy man. So what savings he has gets spent up pretty quick. And then he's in need of long-term care at the time when he is in need of it. You know, Medicaid ends up picking up the bill. So people often think that this is, you know, when we talk about Medicaid and reimbursements, you know, that should just be for poor people. Well, the reality is we don't have a long-term care insurance system in America right now. We need one desperately because as it stands right now, most Americans are not prepared for the expense related to delivering or receiving the kind of services that we offer. So to your question, you know, again, are we anywhere close? We're not. There's a lot of talk about, you know, what we're going to do about long-term care, what we're going to do to pay for it. You know, is long-term care insurance an option? Is home and community-based services an option? There's a lot of talk about that. You know, I often say that we need more home and community-based options. Don't get me wrong, but once you hit 85, you're not... those options aren't for you. You need much more intense services and care. So it's not either or, it's and. And I think, you know, America's got to have a conscience check and a priority check, in my opinion, and really start thinking about what do we want to spend our money on. And based on the demographics you aptly identified, making sure that we're making the investments for the folks who built our country and frankly, put us all in a position to enjoy the America we have today.
Yeah, I think you're really right about that, Cliff. And I hear you. And I know part of this is, well, you're involved in government regulations. And so that is not only regulatory things, but also the potential for reimbursement. And it is hard to see things going to be done on a national basis because, well, I know we look on the news and there's a train wreck and everybody's horrified, or a bridge collapses and we got to go fix that. But here with long-term care, it's like all these tiny bridges are collapsing every day. So they never make the news. It's just somebody who's not getting the care they need for whatever reason. And, you know, part of it certainly is the monetary aspects, but it's almost like when this happens to a family member and they need care, you have to become an expert at the whole system, top to bottom.
No doubt.
And it sounds like from your experience, you did that, Cliff, with your dad.
No question about it. You have to, you know, as you said, with your family members, unfortunately, you know, you have to dig in and figure these things out. And again, I've done this for 35 years of my life. I had to, my mother's passed away. I had to navigate the care for her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an expert. You know, I've been at this a long time. It doesn't make it any easier. It's an emotional process. It's a very intimate kind of process. We have a lot of guilt that we carry.
Yes.
I think, you know, at the end of the day, we're all, you know, wanting to be independent. Our parents are still and always will be our parents. So when they say something, it kind of matters. It means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have to do something that, is necessary, but they necessarily may not want us to do it, it's hard. And, you know, I'm just proud of our members because, you know, in spite of all that tension, both from a policy perspective, from a reimbursement perspective, from a regulatory perspective, but most importantly, from a human perspective, our members stand firm and day in and day out, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, take care of these folks and show them love and kindness in the last years of their life.
What could be any more important than that? Let me mention to our audience, if you're just joining us, I'm Jim Tate, and in this episode of the Tate Chronicles, I'm speaking with Cliff Porter of the American Healthcare Association and the National Center for Assisted Living. So, Cliff, I know that coming up is this observance, the National Skilled Nursing Care Week. What's that about?
Yeah, no, great question. Well, I mean, it's a big party. We try to take time out to create for ourselves and our communities a holiday and an opportunity to celebrate the dedication and contributions of our facilities and their staffs in their communities. And, you know, again, we're in a business that has and oftentimes receives very little thank yous just because it's just a difficult time for families to watch their loved ones decline. And, you know, our folks that do this day in and day out need to have some time to celebrate them, celebrate the work that they do. So that's what this is all about. We spend the week essentially getting out there and celebrating the quality our providers give every day. And then, you know, we celebrate it. We get in the press. We do fun things, take residents on motorcycle rides and you know, things that they want to do that maybe they hadn't had a chance to do in a long, long time and really just have a big party for a week to celebrate the work that we do. It's a great time.
Well, I think I read where the theme for this year is the golden age of radio. Why did that theme get picked for this year's celebration?
Yeah, you know, we call it, you know, Radiant Memories, and it pays homage to the golden age of radio. And the idea is to try to foster a sense of connection and joy through nostalgia. I mean, you talked about it, you know, you mentioned transistor radio earlier in the
conversation.
Like, I know what that is. My son has no idea what a trunk. What's a? He knows what a radio. He's heard that term, but transistor. What does that mean? You know, I mean, that's just something that is a very generational kind of thing. And just the mention of it brings back nostalgia. You know, you putting the radio by your ear and listening to it at night. You know, I had a particular radio station in Washington, D.C. that anybody that's from D.C. knows about. You turned on at night and they played, you know, romantic music. And that was the thing you turned on to kind of wind down. I mean, all that stimulates nostalgia and kind of takes you back. And, you know, at the end of the day, Jim, that's what we have is we have memories. And when you live a full life, It's often healthy to think about the great things that not only you've done, but how blessed we ultimately are. And it's our hope that kind of using the theme of radio stimulates some of those good feelings and thoughts.
Where can we find out, our listeners, any more information about the work your organizations are doing in the Celebration Week?
Yeah, so if you go to www.nsncw.org, and that stands for National Skilled Nursing Care Week, but it's www.nsncw.org. We have just a bunch of toolkits, products, all kinds of things that our centers are using and doing. And I encourage your listeners, you know, don't forget about the nursing home in your community. This is a good time, even if you don't have a loved one there. You know, I just encourage you to take your children over there to visit with folks, and this is a great time to do it. And it gives young people as well an opportunity to learn a whole lot. I'm sitting here looking at a picture of my granddad right now, and he's long gone, but you know, he taught me a lot, and I encourage folks to engage. There's a long-term care facility in every community in America, and I just encourage you to go and visit.
You know, the whole concept of aging care, it's under reimbursed. It's too complex. There are too many options. It's just a very, very complex thing. And, I just appreciate the work that y'all are doing. I truly appreciate it to try and simplify it in some way for the organizations and to give them the clarity and the documentation they need to handle what could be handled. Because even in the best of situations, this is a difficult process. And with the aging population, it certainly is getting larger.
No, I appreciate that. So true.
Yeah, it really is. You know, just kind of one last comment. I'd like to maybe hear some feedback from you on Cliff is if you could wave a magic wand to do something to improve the services that are available, and what would you do? Would it be something being done at a federal level to guarantee reimbursement and care?
That's a great, I mean, if I had a magic wand, absolutely, it would be about understanding first, how do we best deliver care in the communities we serve? You know, what is the goal? What is a gold standard? What's the best we can do? And then get the resources on the ground to do it. And, you know, one of the most important things is to have qualified and competent staff. And we have a structural nursing shortage in our country. We've had it for years. It's not getting any better. And we just have more and more nursing staff are retiring than they are coming into the system. And as I shared and you brought up earlier, you know, how look at that aging demographic. So if you think about it, we got more and more people needing care and less people available to care for them. So between reimbursement and waving a wand and getting folks interested in healthcare and being a caregiver, and getting folks trained and making sure they have a heart to do the kind of work that we do, I think that would take care of a lot of the concerns that families have today.
Cliff, that's a good place for us to end this conversation. To our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. And I offer a special salute to my guest today, Cliff Porter, the American Healthcare Association, and the National Center for Assisted Living. Cliff, I really appreciate you and the work you're doing. Thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you, my friend. I enjoyed it. And thanks to your listeners.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. That's healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.